This morning we'll start as usual with some devotional practice, in the course of which we'll have the Tara Mantra led by Kamalanandi and Sahaja Tara is going to make an offering on behalf of all of us. And last night in the puja, Tara offered us something which could be of great use and benefit for our Dharma life. She gave us each of us a double vajra, which is symbolized by these pieces of paper that we have. But she gave us a real double vajra. So while the Tara Mantra is going on, if anybody wasn't able to be here last night and hasn't received one directly or indirectly, you might like to come forward after Sahaja Tara has made her offering and take the double vajra from Tara. So every day in our Dharma practice, we do our best to set up the best possible conditions for ourselves. We can do that physically, but we can also do it with imagination. So let's remind ourselves that we're still seated within the three circles, that great ring of lotuses is still there. Vajra wall is still there, solid and powerful as ever. And the wisdom flames still burning up doubt, burning up confusion, burning up wrong understandings of how things are. We're seated together within the mandala as a Dharma community, as a Sangha. doing our best to support one another through our practice, through wishing one another well, through the ups and downs of the retreat. By helping one another in whatever way we can. And in this way, something of Tara's qualities comes through us, manifests in this situation. There's far more to come, far more to unfold. So we're focused on the center of the mandala. Focused on, inspired by the qualities of enlightenment. And at the centre of the mandala is Tara. We're in her presence. Her support, her encouragement, to strengthen our connection with her and her qualities, we'll chant the mantra. And as that's going on, we can feel that with each repetition of the mantra, we're deepening our link with her, with wisdom and compassion. And we're receiving more and more of those qualities. Bring more and more of those qualities into the mandala, into our situation, into existence, into ourselves. And while that's going on, we'll do the offering on behalf of all of us, an offering of our open heart.
Om Thai, Om Thai, to Thai.
Letting the mantra carry on internally, either with the same tune or whatever way feels right. healing this source of wisdom and compassion in our heart. So we've taken in the qualities of Tara, which are the qualities of the Buddha, of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They're all there in our heart. So focusing on that. Mantra can carry on or not. What's important is that we have this great source of deep enlightened qualities present in our heart. That feeling, that knowing, with each out breath, have a sense that those qualities are pervading our body. With each in-breath, all our difficulties, all our resistances, all our struggles, all dissolve into that great source of love and wisdom in our heart. let this process just carry on. With each in-breath, all our tensions, all our stresses, all our causes of suffering, everything which holds us back on the path, all dissolves into our heart. And with each out breath, our body, all of us, is pervaded by everything beneficial, all that's helpful, filled with good qualities. This process is naturally expensive. So now, with each in-breath, more causes of suffering start to be drawn in. All the difficulties, all the struggles, all the pain, everything which holds anyone here back, dissolves into our heart. Dissolves into that deep wisdom and compassion. Dissolves away completely. And with each out-breath, everything that would be of help, all resources, whatever encouragement, inspiration, and qualities we need flow out to everyone here. If it helps, we can imagine light going out, a sense of seeing and feeling the process. So there's a field, a network. Love and compassion. So that we're all taking part in one practice. In which suffering and its causes are dissolving away. And more deep qualities are manifesting. We're all sharing in this. And the tendency of awakened qualities is to become limitless. So from all our hearts, with each out-breath, the qualities go out to everyone at Adhisthana, to Bhante, to everyone here. With each in-breath, all suffering, all difficulty, all hindrances and obstacles on the path are all taken away. All dissolve into the source of wisdom and compassion. the process can't stop there. With each out-breath, more resources, more love, more wisdom, whatever's needed, whatever's helpful, whatever's truly helpful, goes out in all directions. And with each in-breath, whatever suffering, whatever lack of freedom, whatever confusion and so on, it's all taken and dissolves into our heart. Dissolves into the hearts of all of us here. With each in-breath, there's less suffering in the world. With each out-breath, there's more true happiness. just let the process go on forever. On some level of our being. But when we're ready, we just let everything rest. Not doing anything in particular. Such a wonderful way to practice. So in terms of how we're exploring things, we're using the breath to go into different aspects of ourselves. We did some work with the body, and even with the moving more onto that subtle energy level, and we've been using the breath to go into Vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feeling, and turning towards emotions. And what we just did was another way of using the breath with positive emotion, that form of, it's called Tonglen in the Tibetan tradition. Tong is giving, Len is taking or receiving. And we have it in our bodhicitta practice, in our mula yogas. But there are lots of different ways to do it. It's a very, very flexible practice. So I think this morning I'd better do something about this pile of questions that's growing. And I'll pick some of the ones which could be useful at this stage of things. Dear Vasantra, it's quite tiring trying to apply mindfulness the body, Vedana, emotions, thoughts, and so on. I can keep it up for a while, but then want to rest from the effort. Presumably it's because it's not second nature, and once it is, it'll be easier to sustain. Or am I applying too much effort? As the percentage of motivation, etc., goes up, does the percentage of ease? If I try less hard to be mindful, it'll probably not happen at all. So, it's quite tiring trying to apply mindfulness. Well, first off, yeah, it does require effort, and it doesn't come naturally to us. Usually, as we're practicing for a long time, what comes naturally is going a bit unconscious and just drifting through situations. There have been studies done with sort of office workers and they seem to show that most people, sort of in a way, were sort of functioning on just one level above autopilot most of the time. You know, there was very little real awareness there. So, yeah, getting awareness into all the different aspects of our experience and keeping it up, you know, minute by minute, you know, hour by hour, yeah, it's work. It's real work. And it does get easier, it has to be said, as time goes on. It gets easier and easier. And eventually it becomes unpleasant to lose awareness. It becomes unpleasant to lose awareness. And so awareness naturally tends to re-establish itself because there's a very unpleasant Vedana associated with losing it. And eventually, yeah, it just becomes how mind works. So at that point, the percentage of ease becomes very, very high. So then the question is, what do we do with this thing about effort and it's tiring and trying? I'm always a bit wary about when people come and sit down in a meditation review and they say, oh, I'm trying to do such and such. Partly because I know from the past that sometimes where I didn't really believe I could do something, I would sort of try very hard in a certain kind of way. It was almost like I made up, you know, nobody could criticize me for not doing it because I'm trying so hard to do it. But actually, I wasn't really confident and I wasn't really motivated. So this kind of sort of revving in neutral made lots of noise and sort of, you know, kind of justified my existence. But trying does mean something, doesn't it? Because, yes, we do make effort. But it's worth looking at the kind of degree of curiosity and interest that we're bringing, because again, we can go into a sort of automatic where, yes, we know we're supposed to be mindful, so yes, we keep trying to be mindful, but it's a very sort of limited approach that we have. It's a bit like, so, you know, can we tick the mindfulness box now? Oh dear, we can't. Oh, now we can, that's good. Rather than a real, yes, perhaps rather than sort of trying quite that way. We should be more kind of exploring how mindfulness arises and how we lose it and under what conditions, and being really interested in all that. So, yes, we do want to make an effort, but we really want to make a skillful effort. And, that skillful effort will also involve, if we are getting tired, okay, let's rest. But if there is a real sense of, well, it's so difficult to generalize, because there can be times where, you feel in spiritual life as if you are making the most tremendous effort. You know, it's like at times you can meditate as if you're knocking down walls. You know, you're just putting all your energy behind something and you are going to go through this. And there's a very strong sense of, sort of force there. But what we're looking for in general practice is this sense of a kind of relaxed awareness. Because that's what's sustainable. We can do the sort of very strong trying. It's like I can try to run 100 meters as fast as possible, but that's not going to sustain me through a marathon. Yeah. So there has to be this way of practicing that we find, which is just steady, relaxed, easy, and aware. And that's what we're looking for. And I think, in a way, I can't give advice about this to 65 people, because we're all a bit different, and I'm always wary. Because what I say for some people is not going to be right for somebody else, and everyone takes it away as general. But yes, if there is a strong sense of making an effort, well, see what happens if you relax back. Yeah, like that exercise that we did with the breathing. Remember where we made the breathing vivid to ourselves. We really held on to it, even if that was a bit tight. But then from there, we explored. We got really interested in how much, I can hold a pen, and I'm definitely holding on to it. I'm not, it's not going to fall because I'm holding it very tightly. But after a few minutes, I'm really going to get a very stiff arm. So let's see how much relaxation there can be. How loosely I can hold it before it drops. So I'm trying to find that point. Yeah. But this is all quite relaxed, but I'm still holding it. So that's what we're looking for. So really exploring that area is really kind of crucial.
Sanjay.
Yeah.
On that moment, if you're going to have powerful waves of energy, do you just ride with it and relax? Because sometimes I get poor with this energy.
Mm-hmm.
Relaxing to you.
Well, depends where the energy is taking you first off, doesn't it? If it's going in the right direction, that's different from if it's heading off in some direction that you really don't want to go in. Yes, some of us are, by nature sort of high energy at times, and that energy is great, but then the work is to kind of ground it. the work is to not get carried into just excitement. The work is to get into the feet, to work on that aspect of things. To sober things down a little bit, actually, so you still have the energy, but it's not, you're not kind of like some kind of Roman candle firework, just with it all kind of dissipating everywhere. Any other questions about that?
Something similar, but perhaps more about pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty arises and body shaking, I suppose, just how to work, perhaps in a more sustained way with that level of energy. Well, I suppose perhaps calm the energy, or do you just let it flow?
It's hard to give general advice, actually, kind of depends. To start with, that kind of release, there's a release of energy going on, and it's quite, and it tends to be a bit kind of rough, and because energy blockages are freeing up. One of the few good things about having really blocked energy is that you tend to get more pretty as you get into meditation, because there's more to release, and it's so. But then there comes a point where, you do need to sort of. Well, you start to discover that the pretty is not really that satisfying, and you start feeling more into sukha and into calm, and you start looking for that level of things more. But the point where you do that would be quite individual. Can't give a general kind of criterion for it. Again, you can explore. Mm-hmm. Explore. Just letting it be and explore what happens. So that effort just to keep up, that gentle, steady, continuing effort to stay aware, should then bring us into contact with all those points where we kind of duck out of our Dharma practice, all those little bits where we sort of skive off for a time here and there. And a retreat is a good opportunity to notice those and to start to get into relationship with them. There are all those moments where one of the images that keeps on coming back to me is there was a Japanese marathon runner, in one of these big kind of fields, like sort of 10,000 people in Tokyo all running a marathon. So he ran the first 8-9 miles, and then at a certain point disappeared off the course a few yards, went down into the metro, into the underground, and he planned it out, and he kind of rode, he bought a ticket, and so he travelled sort of a few stops, came up, and then rejoined the race further on, and did a really good time. So we tend to do that a bit. It's like, here we are, good Dharma practitioners, all going along together, practicing well. But then there's those little bits, where we just sort of kind of disappear somewhere, and nobody quite notices, and then we kind of pop back up, and we're still practicing. And in between, we've been, just not necessarily doing anything terrible, but we've just been, kind of on the net doing this or that or the other, we've got a bit lost in something, or We just kind of dulled out for a while. And it's not as if those things are, any of them are terrible in themselves, but they all just kind of take energy. It's like, you know, one of the traditional similes for receiving the Dharma is that you kind of have, you have some kind of vessel, some container into which the Dharma is poured. So, you know, I go on some retreat, you know, and there's lots of Dharma poured into me, and I kind of go home with all this kind of inspiration. And, you know, I start to use it. And I can almost feel like, you know, the support of, it's like the muses, the darkenies are with me, you know, that I'm inspired and I'm going to practice the Dharma and I'm really going to do it. And, yeah, it's fantastic. But then I get home and, yeah, oh, you know, I've got to check all those emails and I do that. And then I hardly ever go on Facebook, but I've got a Facebook account and I've realised I haven't checked it for months, so I better have a look. And I've got these friend requests and oh, there's so-and-so and, oh, well, I didn't, my friend, I don't know how they're getting on, but they've got a post here, so I'm kind of looking at that, and, oh, and then there's so-and-so, and, oh, that's, oh, and they've posted a video. Oh, and that looks quite interesting. So I, you know, I kind of have a look at that, and then there's a link to another video, which also looks quite interesting. And as time goes on, you know, it's sort of, this little sort of space has kind of opened up, which is sort of getting longer. And, you know, the videos are getting kind of less interesting, but I'm sort of slightly getting into automatic here. And those darkenies who were like at my shoulder and really kind of excited that I was really practicing the Dharma, they kind of go, oh, shucks. And they just kind of go off. And quite right too. So it's like all these things, it's not like they really kind of, you know, they're not seriously undermining our whole practice, you know, and so they never bring us to a crisis, so we never quite do anything about them. But it's all like each one is another little kind of hole in this kind of container of Dharma and inspiration that we come back with. So after a while, our container starts being a bit like a kind of colander, you know, one of those things with lots of holes to let water out, and so the whole inspiration just sort of flows away. And it's those sorts of things which often we don't really notice and don't really address, which actually add up. You know, just like we were talking about, you know, increasing momentum, you know, another percent, you just do a bit more and a bit more. Those are the things which just kind of create inertia and sort of slow the whole thing down and kind of make the whole thing harder work. And, you know. So it's really good just to notice those, you know, those little bits in the day where you're just, you think, I'll just do this for a few minutes. I'll just do that for a few minutes. All those bits, because they all add up, and they add up to making our Dharma life a lot harder for ourselves than it needs to be, actually. So, and the thing is, there are often bits where we go a bit unconscious. And they become a bit habitual, and then it just becomes easy. You know, here we are sitting at home, and our eye falls on something, and oh yes, we find ourselves doing that for a while. So getting awareness through all those bits is really important, because it is really integrating. It's picking up all those members of the crowd who, you know, just are here and there doing this and that. Often it's things which are just, they're kind of easy sources of, it's kind of pleasure. It's not that pleasurable usually. It's not a really sort of strong pleasure, but it's just nice little things that we do, you know, sort of just to, and it's not that there's anything wrong with pleasure, because skillful pleasure is what keeps us going on the path. Yeah? There's no pleasure unless we're extraordinarily gifted with sort of vision and tremendous willpower, we won't keep going. Yeah. But it's, you can almost take it as a sign that if we keep on going for those little, you know, diffuse some helpful sources of pleasure, that we're not finding enough pleasure actually in our Dharma life. And maybe we need to look at that a bit and see what we can do about it. So yeah, a retreat like this is a really good opportunity just to notice those little bits. And rather than just thinking, oh yes, that's just what I do, thinking, do I really want to do that? You know, the dark knees have gone again. So yeah, just address that and bring that in and make it more conscious for ourselves.